First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
The governor appoints a controversial new top doctor for the Sunshine State. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, the state has a new Surgeon General, but he's a physician with beliefs that many other doctors say are dangerous. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, some cities around the country are starting to talk about reparations for their Black citizens. We'll tell you what local leaders have to say about that. But first this hour, Governor Ron DeSantis has announced a new Surgeon General for Florida. He's a Harvard-trained doctor who advocates for an approach to the pandemic that emphasizes individual rights over community precautions. Dr. Joseph Ladapo is a researcher at UCLA who has expressed skepticism of vaccines to end the pandemic. Here is Ladapo talking about his beliefs.
The state should be promoting good health, and vaccination isn't the only path to that. It's been treated almost like a religion, and that's just senseless, right? There are lots of good ways to good pathways to health, and vaccination is not the only one.
Lodapo's views are widely condemned by the vast majority of public health experts and doctors who have emphasized the importance of vaccinating as many people as possible to end the pandemic. As Surgeon General, he will oversee the state's Department of Health, the lead agency on combating coronavirus. Ladapo is also a signatory of a controversial document called the Great Barrington Declaration. Essentially, it calls for letting the virus just run through the population to establish herd immunity. The declaration has been condemned by a slew of public health experts as dangerous and lacking a grounding in science. Michelle Aquino is a hospitalist at Baptist Health and medical correspondent at Action News Jax. She's been on the front lines of fighting this pandemic from the beginning. One of the doctors we turn to for insights about how the effort to combat the virus is going in Florida. And she's on the line now. Dr. Aquino, good to have you back on the show.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And as Florida has a new Surgeon General who has actually expressed vaccine skepticism, we want your calls, 549-2937, emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. So, Dr. Aquino, as someone who's been touting the importance of getting vaccinated from the beginning, because you've seen so many unvaccinated people die in your COVID ward at Baptist Health, what's your reaction to this appointment?
I would say concerning is the biggest reaction I have. You know, in medicine, I've been doing this long enough that one way or the other doesn't really make me freak out or, you know, get super anxious and think, oh, God, the world is ending. I mean, this is just one person's opinion, and he's coming into this position where he's going to have a big platform. And so at this point, I disagree with a lot of what he says and what he represents. I'm open to hearing what he thinks is going to be the answer. That's what I love when people really, you know, are anti-vaccine or anti what we're doing right now. I want to hear what the answer is. How do we fix this? That's what I want to hear. Give me a real solution, and I'm open to listening. Doesn't mean I'm going to agree, but I'm opening to listening. So right now, I'm skeptical, but I'm just going to kind of sit back and see what he does.
It's 549-2937 to join us. You know, 13 of Florida's 67 school districts have mandated masks. They've defied the governor on this. When it comes to vaccinations, Dr. Aquino, cities now face fines from the state if they require city employees to be vaccinated. So we've seen this strong libertarian ideology emanating from the governor's office when it comes to mandates. Leaving that aside, though, can you speak from your experience as a physician and a hospitalist about the importance of vaccination? The majority of patients filling up ICU wards in this state and in this nation right now are unvaccinated.
Right. So this is very basic information. If you get vaxxed, you have a significant protection against this coronavirus, which causes significant harm. That we know. We see graphs over and over throughout the United States, different cities. They have a low vaccination rate. They're having, you know, a high hospitalization rate, which leads to death. We want to stop that hospitalization and death portion. And we know that vaccination decreases hospitalization, decreases death. It's been proven over and over. So for myself, as a physician who sees every day people in the hospital, especially this third Delta wave, Melissa, this third Delta wave that we're having really has been mind-blowing, I would say. You know, to sit at lunch with all my colleagues and we talk about the patients that we're seeing and how young they are and how a lot of them don't have any medical issues. They are otherwise younger and healthier, but they're still in the hospital. They are still sick. And we really are just kind of shrugging, you know, shaking our heads and going, why are these people sick? They shouldn't be sick. This supposedly only gets, you know, older people sick, immunocompromised people sick. But this third Delta wave, we're seeing so many young, otherwise healthy people sick in the hospital, some of them dying, that for me, I look at this and think, well, I mean, these people aren't vaccinated. So obviously vaccination is going to help stop this. It's going to help stop the hospitalization. It's going to help stop the death. So right now, I am convinced with my experience, vaccination is the way to go right now. And again, that's just from my experience, what I'm seeing.
It's 549-2937. The appointment of Dr. Joseph Ladapo is controversial. He has touted hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin as a treatment for COVID-19. Those treatments are not sanctioned by most public health experts. Critics of this appointment say it's a slap in the face to the 50,000 Florida residents who have died from coronavirus. He is vaccine and mask skeptical. He also has appeared with other people who have spoken out about this pandemic who have credentials that are questionable at best. I think it's fair to say. And so, Dr. Aquino, you know, you're on the front lines of this with other doctors in emergency rooms. You're not a politician. You're not an activist. But that said, public health should not be political. And as it has become politicized, that has endangered all of us. That is endangering Florida residents who have become subject to misinformation and bad advice.
Right.
And so I want to get your thoughts about that, because doctors have been pulled into this political arena unwillingly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you hit, the nail on the spot. It's misinformation. I cannot tell you how many people that have been unvaccinated this last wave, this last Delta wave, which, by the way, it's still not done. Our numbers are much better in the hospital. But right now, our numbers are equivalent to our peak in January, if that makes sense. So there, you know, we're not at near 600 patients in across four hospitals. We're down to about 180. But again, that's still a significant amount of COVID patients in the hospital with this Delta wave. And I will tell you over and over, the most common thing I hear from patients that we're able to get them through the hospitalization and we actually are able to get them home is, I didn't know that. I didn't know what to do. I hear all this information and I just become stagnant. I don't know which way to go. I feel like I should get vaccinated, but then I hear all this other stuff. And so misinformation is killing people. Misinformation is confusing a lot of people. And so when I had this discussion with patients that were able to send home, honestly, I've sat down with these patients. I've spent a significant amount of time Googling what vaccine did President Trump get. I've had to Google that for patients and show them, look, he was vaccinated. This is what he got. Which one did DeSantis get? I have to show them that. I showed them which one Biden got. You know, I asked him how many of the governors and how many of the, senators are vaccinated, which I think right now it's like 100%. So I actually sit down and show these patients this information to show them, listen, whoever you're listening to, you have to rethink that because all these people are vaccinated. You shouldn't be in the hospital. You know, and then another thing I want to mention, which is interesting, you know, DeSantis is a very big monoclonal antibody proponent. I agree with the monoclonal antibody. I am glad he has been, you know, aggressive with putting this out there. I wish he were as aggressive with preventing COVID as treating COVID. Okay, prevention is always the first thing you want to do. You don't want to treat, you want to prevent it. Because I will tell you, as a physician in the hospital treating COVID patients, we see patients that get monoclonal antibody, it's not enough, they come to the hospital sick, 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 okay? I will tell you, I've also seen patients that come in and tell me they're taking ivermectin and a Z-Pak. I see those patients all the time. It doesn't help them. So let's stick with the data. Let's stick with what we know. We know masks help decrease spreading COVID. We know this. We have studies to prove this. Okay? We know vaccines help decrease severe COVID. We know they help decrease hospitalization. We know they help decrease death. Let's stick with those facts. Yes, there's a place for monoclonal antibody, but that is kind of like a last-ditch Hail Mary throw before you end up in the hospital. That shouldn't be your first choice after getting COVID. You should concentrate on not getting COVID. So misinformation has really confused a lot of people. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the general surgeon, if you look up the definition of general, the surgeon general, what they're supposed to do, they're supposed to listen to the best scientific information available on how to improve someone's health and decrease the risk of illness and injury. That is the definition of what a surgeon general is supposed to do. So it's concerning to me that we have just gotten a surgeon general that I feel is not in line with that definition, unfortunately. And again, misinformation is killing people daily.
We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Aquino of Baptist Health. She's also medical correspondent at Action News, Jax. About the appointment of Dr. Joseph Ladapo to become the state's new Surgeon General, he still faces confirmation by the Florida Senate. Ladapo, controversially, is a signatory to a document called the Great Barrington Declaration. It calls basically for letting people just get infected naturally with this deadly virus to achieve herd immunity. Dozens of researchers have called this document a dangerous fallacy, unsupported by scientific evidence. 549-2937, Michael in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to know what the recent news about the AMA preparing to sanction doctors who are spreading misinformation, how that might affect the appointment of the new Surgeon General. And I'd also like to know the doctor's opinion on why it seems the governor and the new Surgeon General appointee seem to want to cull the herd instead of keeping us healthy. And I'll listen out. Thank you.
Thanks for that. You know, Dr. Aquino, spreading COVID vaccine misinformation on social media or on traditional media, that could result in sanctions from medical boards. As a physician, can you share your insights about this?
Yes, I'm an internal medicine doctor, and so the American Board of Internal Medicine, the ABIM, actually sent out a statement saying, listen, this is the science. This is what we need to be encouraging patients to do. This is the evidence-based medicine that we have right now, and this is what we need to be following. If you're not following this, there could be sanctions. So, you know, we all get the market letters sent to us, and obviously I think the majority of us agree with this statement. We just have a minority, very small minority, I think, that, you know, are disagreeing with that. I will tell you, here at the hospital and with my connections across the United States, most of us physicians that are working in the hospital, that are taking care of sick patients, I'm not getting any feedback that anyone's thinking of, you know, throwing in ivermectin in treatment or, you know, some of these other things people say we should be doing. So I think when you're taking care of these sick patients in the hospital, we're all pretty much following the guidelines overall. I think when you get into the community, that's where you have some of these doctors, you know, going rogue a little bit, you know, doing some of the other things that there's really no significant evidence-based medicine to follow, like the ivermectin. I keep mentioning that one because that seems to be the flavor of the hour right now. You know, and the thing with ivermectin is it is approved for other things in humans. So I think the mindset for those physicians that are doing that in the community is patients are coming to them saying, I don't want to get vaccinated. You know, you need to help me. You need to do something else for me. And they're going, okay, you know what? This probably won't hurt. It might not help, but I don't think it's going to hurt, so let's try it. I think that's the mindset of some of these physicians practicing in the community. That's one thing I'll say. So I think the AMA, you know, the ABIM, all the medical boards, it's really tough to focus on that one person. You have to find who is giving you this misinformation, and then you have to complain and report it to the state. So it's interesting. You have patients come in, and I'll see them on ivermectin, you know, see them on treatment that I know does not work, that we've seen does not seem to work. Let me rephrase my wording. And, you know, those patients are, it's interesting. They don't want to tell me who their doctor is. They don't want to give me the information. So I think right now we're all overwhelmed in the system, and it really takes a lot of patience and a lot of energy to go through the channels of reporting someone. So I think that's why I'm not sure this is going to be something where, you know, we're going to have all these doctors all of a sudden being, you know, having their license taken away, because I'm not seeing that in this community. There are a few doctors using the ivermectin, but again, it doesn't seem to be a huge percentage of the community. So I don't know how hard that's going to be to really make happen, you know, have these doctors lose their license. That's one answer.
Yeah. What does it say, though, that the state's top doctor holds beliefs that medical boards consider to be fringe, even dangerous? They're seeking to sanction other doctors who hold these beliefs or espouse them publicly on social media,
right,
or give them to patients.
Right.
And this is going to be the physician who is leading pandemic response for the state of Florida.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what our medical boards do with Dr. Ladapo, you know, in his years, because obviously they fall outside the standard of care right now for COVID. So I think, you know, we need to keep our eyes open and see what kind of feedback he gets from our boards and see if, you know, the boards actually are able to impose any kind of restriction or whatnot. So, you know, going forward, that'll be very interesting to see.
549-2937. Give us a call. Mark in San Marco. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Melissa. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, hi, Melissa. Hi, Dr. Aquino. I just have a couple quick questions and I guess a point, too. One is, Melissa, I don't have a lot of familiarity with Dr. Ladapo, except for some of those sound clips that you played at the beginning of the show. But he basically, what I heard during my drive was that he never said anything that, you know, he never said anything anti-vaccine. He didn't say anything like you shouldn't get it. He just said it's not the only, you know, response, and that we should also focus on healthy living. I don't know from what perspective, you know, that's sort of an assailable position. You know, what did he say there that's really wrong? Keeping in mind that Fauci, in an interview in 2019, basically said the same thing. Additionally, Melissa, I have to take a bit of an issue with how you characterize the Great Barrington Declaration. I happen to have some familiarity with it. You described it as a document that was condemned by dozens of health professionals, but you failed to mention also that it's been condoned by hundreds. And I guess
I appreciate that, Mark, but I'm sorry. The overwhelming weight of the medical mind share, if you will, is opposed to the Great Barrington Declaration. Dr. Aquino?
Yeah, I have a few points. First of all, if you look at the writings of Dr. Ladapo, he has said, and I am quoting, you know, he promotes vaccination to prevent serious illness. I agree with that statement. Unfortunately, he says we do not need mandates because adults can make their own decision. I have learned in this process that I feel that adults cannot all the time make the best scientific decision for their health because they're not looking at the medical data. They're looking at other types of data. You know, anything that shows up in print or shows up on the internet is believed as, oh, this is a legitimate source, and it's not. So I feel that a lot of adults that are making decisions for themselves right now are looking at data that we, medical, you know, community do not look at because we don't believe it's adequate data. It's not legitimate data. So I want to say that, you know, and I'm not saying adults can't make their own decisions. I'm just saying in this instance with COVID, there's so much misinformation and so much confusion that at the end of the day, they don't know who to listen to. And that's frustrating. Okay. So that's one concern with the way he sees this. Another thing he does say from the Great Barrington Declaration, actually I read some of it, and part of it says, you know, one of the main things they focus on is treating the old and the infirm, the people that are high risk for getting disease, for getting sick from COVID and dying. You know, the first two peaks of COVID that we've had, I might have agreed with that. But at this third peak with the Delta, this has just, you know, blown my concept of COVID out of the water because I've seen so many young, healthy, sick people in the hospital right now. So I disagree. I completely disagree with that statement of treat only the old and the infirm, because that doesn't make sense right now. With what we have with Delta, that doesn't make sense. It's not just the old and the infirm. The old, about 85% people that are 65 years and older, okay, 85% of them are fully vaccinated in the United States. So you have this virus. Where's this virus going to go if the old and the infirm are vaccinated? Well, it is going to get a few old and infirm because they're, you know, they're immune compromised and their immune system is so weak. But where did it go for this Delta wave? It went younger. We saw a lot of 40, 30, 20-year-olds, 19-year-olds. We saw a lot more sick this, you know, this Delta wave. So the old and the infirm are not the only ones that are going to get COVID. And I want to mention something for everyone looking forward to the future. We have Delta right now causing this havoc. We still have mutations going on throughout the world. So what is the next mutation that sticks around and is even worse than Delta? What is that going to do? I don't know. And that scares me. That scares me. That keeps me up, you know, up at night.
Yeah, I mean,
to be honest.
If we don't reach herd immunity through vaccinations, the next variant could be even more deadly and vaccinations
right.
could be far less effective. That's the big worry, correct?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then think about it. If these viruses keep mutating, getting stronger and getting stronger, eventually all the vaccines that we're all receiving, they're just not going to function. And we're going to have to start at step one again. Right?
On Facebook, Laureen writes, I really did not think public health in Florida could get any worse. I was wrong. We need for the public and elected officials to weigh in on this appointment using the evidence of what Dr. Ladapo stands for. I am so disappointed and worried about the future of public health in Florida, she says. Lots of comments on Twitter as we talk about the new appointment of the state's Surgeon General, still subject to confirmation in the Florida Senate. Here's one tweet. We were heartbroken to hear about the deaths of several Floridians in their 20s yesterday. These kids had their entire lives ahead of them, and now they are gone too soon because of COVID. This virus is taking people younger and younger. Please, we need this age group to get vaccinated. Trey in Jacksonville, you're on the air. Trey, hi.
Hey, Melissa. I just wanted to comment on the fact that I think everybody's being a little disingenuous when they're talking about letting adults make decisions on vaccinations. You know, we don't let adults make decisions on vaccinations when it comes to children and having to get a certain amount of vaccinations to be able to go to school. So that's a hollow excuse.
Thank you for that, Trey. And, you know, getting back to what you said a minute ago, Dr. Aquino, unfortunately, we are in such a divisive, polarized time, and misinformation has brainwashed so many Americans that they aren't capable, unfortunately, of making good decisions to preserve their health. That is where we are. People are dying needlessly and tragically, often leaving young children behind, orphaning their kids because they believe false information about the vaccine.
Absolutely. And let me tell you, Melissa, there's a term that we use in medicine. It's called malignant noncompliance. That's actually a diagnosis. So someone will come in, they'll have diabetes, hypertension, they're morbidly obese, and, you know, they're not taking their medicines. We call that malignant noncompliance. You are not following medical recommendations at, you know, your health, at the expense of your health. You're going to do worse. And so this is, seriously, this doctor, Ladapo, he's practicing what I feel is malignant noncompliance right now. He's really saying, do not follow the evidence-based medicine. It is wrong. I disagree. And these are the other things that can help, which, by the way, I just feel like all these people that are coming out of the left and saying, or the right, or whichever side you want to say, you know, that are coming out, you know, the extreme anti-vaxxers, people like this, Dr. Ladapo, I want to say, listen, I hear you. I hear the frustration. I hear how our lives have changed. I understand that. I understand masks are a pain in the tush. I understand being made to do something I'm worried about is doesn't sit well with me. I get all that, you know, but you've got to give me a better option. You can't just, you know, throw tomatoes at us and say, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. This is the right way to do it. I don't see that. I don't see how that's happening. No one's giving a solution. Right now, the only thing we know is vaccines help, definitely. Masks help, definitely. That I know. This Delta has thrown, you know, all these theories and all these other things people have been saying out of the window. Listen, I have seen pregnant women. If you think a 19-year-old dying is sad, imagine having a 22-year-old woman who did not get vaccinated because, you know, all the concerns and whatnot.
Because she believed a myth that it affected her fertility, which is not true.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the thing is, when you're talking about kids, you know, having parents die from COVID, there's nothing worse than having a pregnant woman. We have to do an emergency C-section, take the baby out. The baby does okay. We hope they don't have COVID. Luckily, they get through. But then mama dies. 22, 23-year-old woman that was just pregnant. That is horrific. That should not be happening. Those are the worst days for us in the hospital. Seriously, the worst days. That happens. I go home and I cry. And I think, what is going on? That should not happen. We should be vaccinating. We need to be masking. And if someone has a better idea, they need to come up with some proof that it's going to work before we all change, you know, what we're doing right now.
I mean, those are the tools we have. Those are the tools that we know work. So always good to get your insights. Dr. Michelle Aquino, hospitalist at Baptist Health. Full disclosure, they are an underwriter here at WJCT. And she's also medical correspondent at Action News Jax. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Much more still ahead on the show later. Some news to lift up your week in our What's Good Wednesdays. But up next,
Asheville, North Carolina, who is the first southern city to pass a resolution for reparations officially, has discussed some of the things that they did in order to get to the point and to the place where they were able to pass legislation in that area.
Why some cities are looking at reparations for Black citizens and what the local NAACP has to say about it. That's next. Well, it's not a new idea, but today there are increasing calls for reparations, payments to Black Americans for the up to 40 million U.S. residents whose ancestors endured generations of state-sanctioned slavery and for the legal and de facto discrimination that continued into the Jim Crow era that followed for many more decades. A few U.S. cities have actually decided to implement reparations programs. Jacksonville is not one of them. But local leaders say they are pressing city officials to address longstanding inequities here in the 904 in some other ways. For more on this, I spoke with Tony Brown of the local chapter of the NAACP. Here's that conversation. Tony, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So as more cities around the country seek either reparations or at least putting forth official apologies for slavery, what's happening in Jacksonville when it comes to this issue?
Well, in Jacksonville, we're kind of in the infancy of trying to get buy-in from the people as well as the elected officials. What we have done is Asheville, North Carolina, who is the first southern city to pass a resolution for reparations officially, has discussed some of the things that they did in order to get to the point and to the place where they were able to pass legislation in that area. One of the things that we wanted to stress in Jacksonville was we wanted to hone in on something specific that you can kind of quantify today, which is redlining. Redlining to me is no more, no less important from the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow, but we can still see the effects of redlining today, and there are still people who are living presently today who still feel the effects of redlining. So we wanted to be real specific in terms of how we dealt with reparative justice here in Jacksonville specifically.
And how do you think that might play out with the Jacksonville City Council? There probably isn't the political will here to do what cities like Asheville, North Carolina have done, but you are trying mm-hmm. to raise this issue locally. And what are you hoping realistically to accomplish?
Well, there are a couple of things. One of the things that we need to do is we need to take a page out of Dr. King's book and raise the awareness for mainstream media, not only locally but nationally, in terms of restoring wealth in communities and reparations as a general conversation. But our plan here in Jacksonville is to try to consolidate all of these organizations and all of the folks who are like-minded to put pressure and to civically engage our local officials, and not necessarily shame them, but let them know specifically that these communities are neglected, and they're neglected not because of a lack of working hard or they just so happen to be in a different part of the city, but there was some policy, not only from a redlining standpoint, but also promises unfulfilled because of consolidation in the 60s, as recently as the 60s, that we feel like if we can kind of redistribute some resources in those communities, we can kind of change the narrative. So, you know, to make a long story short, we're putting together a collaboration of organizations called Red Alliance of Justice. We are inviting all organizations who want to see humanity practice, not just from a reparation standpoint, but just, you know, common humanity in terms of sidewalks, you know, eliminating food deserts, businesses being reestablished, and just the infrastructure coming back, because there were highways and byways that were ran through these communities, and it was on purpose in terms of socially engineering these communities the way they are. So we want to put together a group of individuals to go down to City Hall and to not ask and not beg, but demand that there be a change and there be a policy for folks, man, who were in some of these red line communities.
And what would that policy look like?
Well, the policy would look this way. There are a number of demands that we are asking for. One of them is low interest rates on some of the homes in some of the areas, specifically in Newtown, Durkeyville, Moncrief. These areas were redlined as early as the late 20s. All the way into the day, they're still affected. We want to see the infrastructure improved. We also want to see programs like Operation Tiger Paw, as well as Students and Troops is a policy program that you implement in the local high schools to give the students an opportunity to go through police training and to be able to police their own community. So there are a number of different initiatives we already have. We just need to marry those initiatives to that money that would come. And the money would come from the budget as well as an outside entity that is specifically for those red line areas. They wouldn't be taxed, and they wouldn't be coming from another different money source like we see in some of the other cities.
So when do you plan to take this to City Hall?
We plan to take it to City Hall the fourth Tuesday in October. That is tentatively when we want to do it. Again, we're asking all organizations, everyone who is a fan of humanity, and everyone who wants to see these communities thrive again like they were prior to red line policies. And so that is the target date around the 26th, I believe, October the 26th is the date. So for anybody who is interested, we do have a meeting tomorrow with the Economic Committee at 6, and they're more than willing to reach out to me so they can listen to some of these action steps that we have moving forward.
Tony Brown with the Jacksonville NAACP. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For years, millions turned to their daily local paper to help them stay connected to their community. Many papers have gotten smaller and some are gone altogether. So public radio news is growing to fill the void, and we need your help. There's strength in local journalism, and it begins with you. Give now at wjct.org/donate or call
353-9528.
Well, Atlantic Beach-based artist Philip Bennett Walker has been really busy lately. He's got mural projects all around town, a new exhibit at the Jacksonville International Airport, and even the opening of a new shop later this week. Hey, Philip, good to talk to you.
Hey, Melissa, thanks for having me.
All right, so much happening in your world. Let's begin with your new mural projects. Tell us about those and where people can see them.
Yeah, we've been real busy throughout 2021. We've put a few murals on the beaches, and we just did one in Murray Hill. We've got one on Jack's Beach Brunch House in Jack's Beach, and a few in Atlantic Beach with Art Republic. We helped do the Mayport murals.
And what do the murals depict for people that haven't had the chance to see them yet?
They range in style, everything from abstract to my signature style with my background striping. I've got a big pier and a couple plants and stuff like that.
That's fun. And you're adding to a really robust public art tapestry across the city. What do you think public art does for our community?
Definitely uplifts it. I've seen a lot of people come together over these projects between myself and other muralists and artists. It's been really cool to see happen.
Now, you also exhibited your work at the airport, yes?
Yes, yeah. We did a show from July to all the way through September 30th.
Now, that is still up at the Haskell Gallery, original paintings and prints narrating your Floridian upbringing. So that's another opportunity for people to come out and see your work. All right, let's move on to the other big project in your world. You are opening up a new store, boutique and gallery with your wife this Friday.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, from 5 to 9. I'm opening it with my wife, artist Elizabeth Walker. We're doing our jewelry company, Elizabeth Sarah Collections, and my artwork. So we're going to have originals, prints, jewelry. It'll be a nice little place for people to come and hang out and kind of check out our vibe.
All right. That's cool. And what's it like doing all this in the middle of a pandemic? What are some of the challenges that you guys have encountered?
You know, it's been crazy, but really good. I think a lot of the people that have been alongside us, we've all supported each other, and it's been a learning experience for everybody. But I think throughout the whole thing, we've kind of learned to tighten up everything we do and just become better artists and better business people. So, you know, not saying that I enjoyed the pandemic at all, but I definitely learned from it, and we definitely became better people from it.
Absolutely. Now, with the opening, you have some special goodies on tap for people who stop by. Tell us about what they can expect.
Yeah, so I made 20 prints, two different prints you can choose from. So the first 20 people that show up that make a purchase from our gallery, either jewelry or artwork, get one of these free signed and numbered prints. We're also going to have mixed drinks made by our purveyors of the godlike nectars at Gray Matter Distillery. So we're going to have drinks and wine and a little bit of nibbles from Alley Cakes and Royal Palm Wine and Tapas.
How fun. Well, come on out Friday and meet Philip and Sarah, his artwork and the Elizabeth Sarah Collections Boutique and Gallery opening this Friday in Jacksonville Beach. Philip, have fun with it. And thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it.
All right. And it's artists and creators and innovators that make up a big part of our community here at WJCT News, along with newsmakers and public officials, educators, scientists. David Luckin here now. You know, we love to feature local artists, David, local authors, local creators like Philip, because they are a big part of what makes public radio so vibrant.
And we and them is what makes the fabric of this community. So we are always so happy to bring in artists and musicians and folks because they need the exposure, and we are so happy to provide it here at Public Radio, 353-9528. Give us a call now. We need your support. This is our flagship program that involves the community in every level, whether you're a listener or a newsmaker. You're on this program, and it's my favorite program here. So give us a call, 353-9528. We want your support so that we can continue to broadcast another 49 years. NPR's 50. We're 49. Next year, we'll be 50.
And getting we're into middle age.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the halfway mark, 50 That's years right. and 50 to go. So give us a call now. Support this program. You listen every morning. Maybe you've called in and asked questions. Now it's your turn to call in and share some of the wealth. 353-9528. And if you can't afford it, we totally understand. These are extraordinary times for a lot of people. We want you to just sit back and enjoy and listen to the program.
That's right. If you're someone who can't afford to donate, keep listening. If you're someone who can afford to donate, you're donating for the whole community, for people that can't afford to pay for this public service. But we are sweetening the deal, folks. All donations received this month will be entered to win our drawing. Two lucky people will receive a pair of tickets to see Hamilton live at the Times Union Center in Jacksonville. In addition to that, FSCJ Artist Series has provided us with some Hamilton gift bags for the lucky winners. That includes a Hamilton scarf, water bottle, mug, coasters, and some other goodies in the swag bag. How about that, everybody? That's a great incentive. So make the call now. Get entered into our Hamilton drawing, 353-9528. We will also, if you sustain us at $10 a month, which we love, we'll gift you with either a Public Radio Nerd t-shirt or WJCT branded socks. They're very popular, I have to tell you. If you support us at the amount of $12.50 a month, we're going to send you both the t-shirt and the socks. So, David, think about it. You could win Hamilton tickets and WJCT swag, and you have bragging rights, and you become part of our community of sustainers and listeners. And I have to say, I talk to people every day, and they are just the most amazing people around, the people that listen to and support this public radio station. They're just a great community.
All right, you convinced me. I'm going to leave now and go pledge. No, luckily, Melissa and I are both sustainers, so our money comes
That's
in
right.
every month. Right,
we're
from our
two of those cool people. That's right.
It's easy that way, $10 a month. If you're at $10 a month now, maybe you'd like to increase it to $15 a month, or maybe you'd like to do just a one-time gift just to get you in the drawing for Hamilton. That would be great, too. Whether it's $5 or $500, we will accept your pledge because we need the money, because we pay over $600,000 for the programming for radio here. So a couple times a year, we ask you for a little bit of help, and you always come through. So come through for us now, 353-9528. Call us.
Give us a call. You can also text in your donation to News899 to the number 44321. Text to give, folks, or donate at WJCT.org. However you like to do it, we appreciate it. Pull over to the side of the road before you make the call or text. Be safe out there. But again, the number to be entered into our Hamilton tickets drawing, 353-9528. No amount too large or too small, by the way. Donate what you can afford to donate. You won't get a deal like that anywhere else in town, I can tell you that. We are unique here on the First Coast. So support public radio on this first day of fall. Let's enter into fall with a nice, cool blast of donations. 353-9528 or online at WJCT.org or text in your donation, News899 to the code 44321. In a moment, we have some good news and notes for your Wednesday. That's coming up next.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at VickersLanding.com.
Wingard Marketing and Communications Agency, committed to businesses, nonprofits, and marketing teams to help develop data-driven advertising plans for Jacksonville and beyond. More information on Wingard's services can be found at WeAreWingard.com.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. School bus drivers are in high demand. The director of a bus fleet in one Arizona district had to start driving a van full of kids himself, surprising parents when he showed up at the bus stop in a shirt and tie.
The parents were looking at me. They were like, who is this guy? Hi, you know, you have to greet him. I'm the director.
Solving the bus driver shortage next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, BJ Novak, who became famous for his role on The Office as Ryan, who had an on-again, off-again relationship with Mindy Kaling's character Kelly Kapoor. Novak was also a writer and executive producer of the series. He's created the new topical anthology series, The Premise. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
More than 18 million Americans are signed up to MLMs, multi-level marketing companies. They sell products through individual distributors and offer anything from life coaching to makeup. It has its boosters and successes, but what of the many claims that MLMs are home to an underworld of predatory tactics where most lose out? That story next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the 45th Annual Cultural Council Arts Awards are coming up tomorrow night. And just as they did last year, this is going to be a virtual affair, one that honors the top artists and influencers in town. I got a preview from their CEO, Diana Donovan.
This year, we are virtual as well. So ByStar is our title sponsor. So we're so grateful to them as a corporate sponsor who really understands the quality of life of Jacksonville and its success being predicated on the emphasis of arts and culture. So it's ByStar as our title sponsor for the 45th Annual Virtual Arts Awards on September 23rd. And we have presenting sponsors also supporting. It'll be sponsored by and produced by PRI Productions. We also have another presenting sponsor, PNC Bank, as well as Florida Blue. For our Arts Awards this year, we have two opportunities for the public to participate. We have a VIP celebration box, and these are a limited edition series. Each piece has a manifest and a du blaze featured distillery craft cocktail. It's infused with multiple cultural arts and organization items. You get your own piece of art. Ocean Soul helps sponsor it, so you'll get your own piece from Ocean Soul. Bread and Board has their famous charcuterie in it. And so we have a lot of different things that you can get for $125. For your VIP ticket, you can help make the craft cocktail with us. Get a little bit of manifest, a little bit of local distilleries, local artists, and have a surprise in every box from a Northeast regional artist. And then general tickets. If you'd like to be able to see all the good community stewards doing hard work in the community and being elevated on this platform as the people really leading Jacksonville forward, a general ticket admission price is $25. So we encourage people to go to culturalcouncil.org. or follow us on Instagram or Facebook at More Art Culture for more information on the Arts Awards. But we have some incredible nominees this year, and we're really excited to highlight and showcase the nominees as well as the winners, because we believe that anyone and everyone in our community helping to contribute to the overall good, we want to be able to give our platform away and take a moment to say, like, in a year of resiliency and innovation, these were the people that really helped make sure our community stayed as rich and wonderful as it is.
Check it out. Register for the virtual event at the Cultural Council's website. Well, it's Wednesday, so here's some more notes for you. What's good this week on our menu? PB&J Jacks, that stands for Party, Benefit, and Jam. They're partnering up with the city's gem, Norman Studios, to present a special viewing of the classic silent film, The Flying Ace. It's all to celebrate National Silent Movie Day. Now, the screening takes place next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock via Zoom, and they've got some special hosts for this incredible viewing of a major historic film shot in Jacksonville 100 years ago, featuring an all-black cast, so rare in those days. And it all stems from the golden era of this city's heyday as a silent film capital. Register now for this exciting cinematic event at normanstudios.org. Well, the Jaguars are kicking off a month-long celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month with a series of events honoring the rich history and significance of the Latino community. It's one of the fastest growing populations in Northeast Florida. That includes an original hand-painted mural by regional artist Whitney Perez, just unveiled at DuPont Middle School. This Friday, the Jags will recognize three winners of the Duval County Public Schools Hispanic Heritage Month essay contest. One winner each from elementary, middle, and high school will receive game tickets, a custom Jaguars jersey, Jaguars apparel, and in-game recognition. Congrats to them. 11 nonprofits across town have received a total of nearly $600,000 to increase access to mental health services in our area. So needed right now. This is the latest round of grant making from the Partnership for Mental Health, which is an initiative of the Dolores Barr Weaver Legacy Fund at the Community Foundation for Northeast Florida and Baptist Health. Grant applications for the latest round of funding are being accepted now. The application deadline is November 15th. There's about $100,000 remaining in the Partnership for Mental Health Fund. Priority for this final round of grants will be given to small and mid-sized organizations. And grants will be $10,000 or less. So check that out at the Community Foundation, because certainly in this pandemic and in these extraordinary times, mental health services have become more important than ever. And thanks so much for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks also to senior producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, and editorial director Jessica Palumbo. Keep your emails coming. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Catch our podcast up later today on all platforms. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.